trauma can cause a developmental ripple for some clients. So how do we help clients flourish after trauma has limited their choices in life? According to Dr. Laurel Parnell, there's one phase of treatment that can be crucial for post-traumatic growth.
There's a difference between people who've had single incident traumas, simpler traumas like a car accident, a mugging, some war trauma that isn't connected to all kinds of early childhood trauma. And when you're doing therapy with somebody who had extensive early childhood physical or sexual abuse and neglect. So the first example with EMDR, it's often very quick therapy. It's 1 to 3 sessions. You can clear the trauma out and the person is just back to living their life and they're free of their symptoms. So that's one way of working. And there isn't much you need to do in terms of, you know, post-trauma recovery. They just go live their life. With the other example, with somebody who's had extensive physical or sexual abuse, and you're really doing developmental trauma work, you're repairing, it's longer term therapy. So it could be a year, 2 years, longer than that. And it requires a close therapeutic relationship. So let's say, so in example, I work with, I can think of two people I work with who had extensive early childhood physical and sexual abuse. And it took several years in terms of the main part of the work. And so there was the preparing, the resourcing them, the strengthening them, and then the going in on the traumas. And with the trauma work with EMDR, in both of these cases I'm thinking of, a lot of the trauma memories were dissociated. So they had all kinds of symptoms, nightmares, anxiety, dissociative symptoms, but they didn't have the memories of what happened to them. So the memories would start to come as we do EMDR on the dreams or on some of the symptoms, and then the horrific things would begin to come out. So I think of these kinds of therapies with early childhood sexual abuse, it's extensive, it's having three phases. There's kind of the preparation where you're strengthening them and you're doing a lot of ego strengthening work and resourcing. The middle phase where you're doing the intensive trauma processing work. And the end phase is kind of what you're talking about, is the major trauma part is done. And you're working on issues around who am I now? How am I going to live my life? Because so much of their life force and their energy was focused on managing their symptoms, many people don't get an education. They don't have healthy interpersonal relationships. They've avoided all kinds of things. Their lives have been pretty limited. So this last phase, which you're calling the post-trauma phase, is really how you do some of this developmental repair, how you go back and fill in what they didn't get.
As Laurel mentioned, trauma can rob our clients of their potential, of being all that they want to be. So it could be helpful to review Laurel's three phases of working with early life trauma. In phase one, we have to strengthen the client's self-image and build up their resources. In phase two, we begin the work of helping the person process the trauma. And in phase three, we go into developmental repair, where we help the client orient toward the future and how they fit into it. To get a clearer picture on how this might look in practice, Laura will now take us through her approach with a longtime client.
So one of my clients, I call her Melanie. I worked with her for several years, and she had come in to see me originally because she'd had a major loss in her life. Her brother had been killed, and she was thrown into a major depression. Now, she was kind of a working class gal who never was in therapy, didn't want anything to do with therapists or doctors. So she came to see me, and I told her early on that she needed to stop drinking. Well, I had no idea just how much she was drinking, but she stopped drinking. And then what happened was nightmares and flashbacks started coming. And so we did all the preparation for EMDR with the resource work, but then we would go in and we would focus on the nightmares with EMDR, and they would go directly into a horrific childhood abuse memory of either sexual abuse or physical abuse. Some of them, she was almost killed. So we would reprocess these. she'd feel better. I was seeing her twice a week for at least 2 years. I would see her twice a week. She'd feel better. This, you know, that nightmare would go away. By the next week, another nightmare had surfaced. We reprocessed that nightmare. That would immediately go to another horrific thing that happened to her. So we were doing this really intensive work for at least 2 years. And then what happened was the nightmare subsided. Her symptoms really subsided. She began to feel much better. And so we cut back from twice a week to once a week. And then we would do EMDR and whatever was coming up. And then after a while, we cut back to every other week. But the focus began to be then, who am I now? You know, and then grieving the loss of the education she never got, of the relationship she never had, of all these things. She was probably by then in her early 40s. She was getting beyond when she would be able to have children, and she'd always wanted to have children. So some of what we did was we reprocessed grief and loss. She went back to school. She began to get an education. She began to get retrained in terms of other job skills. So some of the work was then on anxiety about doing these things. So we would use EMDR on targeting, reprocessing those things. It was also on strengthening her and doing more talk therapy about what kind of a life do you want to have? What kind of a future do you want to have? What does that look like? So she could use bilateral stimulation to imagine the kind of future she would want to have. So this is a kind of resource work. I know we've talked about this before. So with EMDR, what we do is we do trauma work where we activate the trauma memory, we add bilateral stimulation, and it processes that to an adaptive resolution. With what I call resource tapping or resource installation, what we do is we activate positive memories, positive imagery, and then we add short amounts of bilateral stimulation. And what that does is it fully integrates that positive into the nervous system. So if it would be, what kind of life do you want to have? So create an image in your mind of what that would look like, and then add short amounts of bilateral stimulation. So the bilateral stimulation can be eye movements. It can be auditory stimulation. It can be physically tapping on the knees. The client can do it for him or herself, or the therapist can use devices or tap themselves.
With many of her clients, Laurel is focusing on their grief and their loss from the trauma and using EMDR to help them process it. According to Laurel, EMDR can speed up the processing of information so that the client doesn't have to stay as long with their grief and sadness. Her clients seem to respond well to this treatment.
And really where she would end up is a kind of appreciation for where she was. She said, I have so much more insight and understanding of myself than anybody else in my family does. You know, that would be the sense of kind of coming to gratitude and appreciation and her connection to spirituality, which is also very common that people have with EMDR. So connection to something, a greater meaning, a greater sense of wholeness. And she could see the comparison, even though she was the one in her family that was targeted for the abuse. Her siblings hadn't been abused. She could see that they were unconscious and she was really conscious and awake and alive in a way that the others weren't. So it just takes her to that. But it would be more small T things. You know, we have the large T traumas and the small T traumas. So the small T traumas are the losses, the things that she didn't get. And then it becomes, well, what can you do now? Oh, I can go back to school. I can learn to have a relationship with somebody. And then targeting places where she'd like to go out with somebody, but she feels anxious. And then processing her anxiety around that.
As we've seen in our work with clients, one of the most difficult parts of healing from trauma can be addressing the parts of our lives that got lost along the way. For a deeper look at dealing with the grief that can come from this kind of loss, let's revisit with Dr. Rick Hansen. Because according to Rick, helping clients see the purpose in their grieving can be a crucial step in their healing.
Balance, of course, is whether we're helping something flow and complete itself and release and find meaning in it and so forth, or whether we're doing one more lap around the track in hell and reinforcing the material, including in the neural circuitry. That's the balance, right? around grief. And so I think that's the first question. What's the result? You know, what's the function served, if you will, by the grieving? And, you know, so now let's assume that the function is a healthy one. There's a releasing quality. I'm very struck by it. I mean, I've had my own grief. Both parents have died, and there have been other things. And, you know, as someone who's kind of trained, but for many reasons, including in my, you know, childhood, to be kind of constricted and numb from the neck down, it's been really important to explore what actual grieving is like. And one of the things that has struck me about it is its biological nature, just the sense of something very deeply animal and physical. Like, we need to inhale, we need to cough, we need to grieve. And we're profoundly social primates. So grief and grieving in a healthy way is really part of that. So I think there's a necessity to it. It's easy sometimes to kind of glide over it, but then our efforts at healing don't really have any kind of fundamental traction. I think there's a humility in grieving where we give over to the current. We have to give over to it and not have the kind of grandiose top-down fantasy of control that is so, you know, endemic in our Western culture. So as the gestalt completes, that's what the brain is continually trying to do. It's trying to complete its gestalts, complete its patterns. And until it does, it's like someone knocking on the door. So there's the return of the repressed. Maybe we need to empty the bucket of tears, as I have felt in my own life, one spoonful at a time. But it needs to be emptied. It wants to complete. And it's only when it's fully experienced that it actually can fully complete. And I'm a little myself skeptical of or cautious about a certain glibness that can come in to the field of trauma therapy, where there's a kind of quick fix or just, you know, look at it this way or do this, you know, magic thing and somehow it'll work. And I just think there's a lot about this that's very, very deep, including in a circular kind of way. In other words, we're spiraling, rather. We cycle through a layer of grief, then the next layer presents itself, and then the next one, and the next one after that. And then, so all that said, to do all that, wow, no small thing. And that's where the focus on resourcing seems so fundamental. Resources like the sense of compassionate companions that are with you, or that your suffering is part of a broader common humanity, or just intellectually understanding why in the world you're feeling your feelings when your feelings really, really hurt. So maybe I'll just leave it right there. There's a lot that we could say about resources, but the striking thing for me throughout this is just the deep necessity to relax into and to help yourself be willing to be carried fully along by that great river of grieving, that river of tears.
When clients come to realize what they've lost out on as a result of their trauma, it can be incredibly painful. I mean, it can really sink deep inside and be hard to process. But resources like the ones Rick shared can help them find the motivation to move forward. Now, so far, we've looked at several ways to foster post-traumatic growth in our clients. But here's one question we've yet to address. Are there some clients who might be predisposed for post-traumatic growth? We'll get into that in our next module. I'll see you there.